Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast live on our Facebook, YouTube and Twitter channels and later on our podcast channel. If you're listening on the podcast channel, please remember to like and subscribe to the podcast through your podcast provider and leave us a rating and review. And if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button as well. I'm Andrew Musgrove and as usual, joined by Aaron Stokes a day later, but we'll be quite honest with you. Yesterday, there was not much to talk about at all. And it seems soon as it hit 5 o'clock on Monday evening, all the news dropped about Newcastle United. There was Luis Carius eventually being announced as a Newcastle United player. And the news that Newcastle will indeed face Bournemouth on Saturday. Of course, the Premier League was put on hold following the death of Queen Elizabeth. But the games, at least outside of London, will continue this weekend. Aaron, I mean, that's welcome news. We both felt last weekend the games, in our opinion, should have gone ahead because it would have been the perfect way to pay tribute to Her Majesty. There was a bit of debate, I was a little bit concerned that we would have a weekend without football yet again this weekend coming. But thankfully, the right decision has been made and football fans can unite across the country and really show their respects to Her Majesty.
Yeah, 100%. As we've touched on, you know, we thought the game should have went ahead at the weekend, especially when you saw other sports paying tribute in such a, you know, respectful way. But I'm glad that, you know, the Premier League and other football divisions have seen sense and they haven't sort of postponed another week. I think, you know, a lot of fans, including me and you, were sort of dreading the prospect of no club football for a month, given the internationals are coming up. So, yeah, good decision. And I think, you know, St. James's Park will pay tribute on Saturday in a respectful way.
Definitely. I mean, as Aaron mentions there is a break in the Premier League coming up. So it would have been a long time without football had this Saturday not gone ahead. Newcastle, of course, have only picked up one win this season. So they are in need of 3 points. Bournemouth. Now, we will have our usual match preview podcast with myself and John Gibson on Thursday, but Aaron will just briefly touch on the Bournemouth game. You know, obviously Eddie Howe's got his history there with Bournemouth. They seem a very up and down team at the moment. Obviously Scott Parker went after that defeat to Liverpool, but Gary O'Neill steadied the ship. Not really a team I don't think you can expect to beat, because I just don't think you know which Bournemouth side are going to turn up.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, you know, if the team that went to Anfield a couple of weeks ago turns up, I think, you know, Newcastle will be taking their second win of the season. But, you know, a very, very spirited performance against Forest last week, you know, coming back from 2-0 down to win the game. And I think, you know, a lot of people had written them off before that game as, you know, a team that's just destined to go down. But, you know, Gary O'Neill seems to have got them playing, at least in the short term. But I mean, look at that, 6 games played, 18 goals conceded. You would fancy, you know, Newcastle United, if they're all fit and firing on Saturday, to, you know, really punish them. And I think if we can see a repeat performance of that, you know, Nottingham Forest game, if we see how clinical they were against Manchester City, I don't see why Newcastle can't win. And I think, you know, crucially, you know, just looking at the league table here, Newcastle United haven't had a win since that opening day. They do sort of need one. Eddie Howe touched on it in his last game about how he's disappointed they haven't got more points from their first 6 games. So this is a real, real big one that they need to win before the international break.
Lots of positives, though, in those draws that we've seen. Of course, we'd all like more points on the board. Does there come a stage in the season when we have to stop saying Newcastle played well, they were just unlucky, you know, some good saves by the opposition goalkeeper, or they just didn't take their chances, or VAR got in the way? Is there a stage, is that stage coming up if they, you know, if they draw against Bournemouth on Saturday? Is that moment where you just got to be a little bit more brutal with the reality of the situation? Say, right, okay, they may have played well, but they've still only got one win under the belt.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, fans are, you know, rightly or wrongly, have got aspirations to try and break into that top seven now. You know, there's no room to be dropping points. I think, you know, you look how lucky they were against Liverpool, but then you also look at how poor they were against Brighton. You know, the time's sort of coming now that they need to do start, you know, they do need to start getting wins on the board and, you know, making sure that they're going into this World Cup break in the next 2 months in a really good position to kick on in 2023.
And we had Billy Gaddis there in the comments asking, do we have a full team For Saturday, obviously, the big names that have been missing recently, Callum Wilson, Alan St. Maximin, and Bruno Guimaraes. Do we expect any of them to be back for Saturday?
You'd expect Bruno and Max, you know, the last we heard from Eddie Howe when we spoke to him a couple of weeks ago was that they were very, very close to making the game against Palace. Obviously, neither of them were in the match day squad, but, you know, the vibes that we got from Eddie Howe was that the injuries weren't serious. When it comes to Callum Wilson, I think you're probably looking at, you know, another couple of weeks. I think if there's any doubt in Eddie Howe's mind that he might not be fit enough, he's not going to be a risk. You know what I mean? Isaac's, you know, came in, he's done well in his first two games. And obviously, we know it'll probably come too soon for Shelvey, and it'll definitely come too soon for Kraft. So I think if we can get Bruno back in, get Maxi back in, you know, it'd be interesting to see how Bruno and Isaac line up.
Well, we've got a comment there from JW Muson who says, do you think Wilson and Isaac can play together? So that will be further down the line. Is that something you think can happen? Because I suppose while Wilson's out, do you foresee Eddie Howe approaching it as in what's best for the team on that day? Or do you think in his mind he will be thinking to the future and thinking, well, do we make little tweaks here and now so when Wilson's back fit and raring to go, he just slips straight back in?
I think there'll definitely be, you know, planning behind the scenes now. Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall and the coaches will be saying, you know, we don't have the dilemma now, but when it happens, when Wilson's fit again, we probably do need a plan to get both of these players in, because Callum Wilson isn't going to be happy sitting on the bench. Alexander Isaac, for the money that you paid for him, you wouldn't want him sitting on the bench. The only thing is, and it's quite an interesting dilemma, because Eddie Howe has stuck to his guns so far since coming in. It's always 4-4-3. It's always just a lone attacker. And, you know, for the best part of the last year, it's worked. So it'd be really interesting to see if he changes that, you know, maybe goes 4-4-2, or how he sort of manages the wide players if he does bring the two of them in to play up front alongside each other. Everybody that's watched Isaac in Spain says that he can play in a two and that he can play with, you know, another striker. But obviously we haven't seen that for, you know,
it would be slightly ironic though, wouldn't it, that you bring in a new striker, £60 million, and then you change to a formation which you haven't changed to very often, if at all, at your time at Newcastle as manager. And the ironic thing would be that that formation actually suits your £25 million striker sitting on the bench, in i.e. Chris Wood, who would be right at home at a 4-4-2. And you would think with a 4-4-2, you'd have men down both flanks getting the ball in the box. But it's interesting you mention a potential change there, because is 4-4-2 something that suits Alan St. Maximin? Probably not, because like I say, I think when you say 4-4-2, you think wingers, ball into the box. Does that approach actually suit Isak and Wilson? Because is heading that necessarily their strong point, or is it more running into the channels?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll know more in a couple of games once we've seen Isak. And I mean, obviously, we've only seen him for about, you know, 140 minutes so far. It'd be interesting to see. You know, I didn't think his link of play was very good against Palace. That was just my opinion. But I think we'll know more in a couple of weeks. I think what's interesting is that we're having this discussion now and, you know, how they're going to fit in together. It's weeks away. And also with Callum Wilson's injury record, you know, how many games are they actually going to be fit together? Because look, as much as we all love Wilson and we praise him on this podcast all the time, we've said all summer he might get injured, and it's happened, you know, three games at the season. So it's a big if, but as I say, I think we'll know more in the coming weeks once we've seen Isaac in action a bit more.
With John Steele there saying, is this the game to start Elliot Anderson? For me, he's ready and gives us an attacking threat. Now, I choose sports writer Lee Ryder. I picked the best starting 11 made up of performances this season and kind of looking ahead, and he put Elliot Anderson into his starting 11, which I think, you know, provoked a little bit of debate. But for me, Elliot Anderson, really, he shone against Crystal Palace. I thought Newcastle, as I've mentioned previously, suffered when Almiron went off, and it was only Elliot Anderson's kind of want to be on the ball, his directness, that offered a threat for Newcastle. I think this probably is the right sort of game for him, because if this game against a Bournemouth side who do concede goals, who can turn up and play really well, but also have a really bad day in them, as we saw against Liverpool, as we saw in the first half against Nottingham Forest. If this is not the game for Elliot Anderson to start, then you're asking, what is?
Yeah, and I think coming off the back of that amazing cameo that you had against Palace, where he was, you know, the most dangerous player on the pitch for that 30 minutes he was on, we're all just sort of waiting for that team sheet to finally be dropped, where we see his name on it. Now, this is the thing, if Maxi comes back on Saturday and he's fit and firing, you can't see Anson starting over him or Miggy. It then means, does Howe take a bit of a risk and play him in centre mid, you know, alongside Joe Linton and Bruno or Longstaff? That's probably, you know, the positive of it, is that we saw how good he played out on the wing against Palace, when really he's been used in the centre across pre-season and in the previous games he came on in the Prem. So, good dilemma to have. I would absolutely love to see him from the outset on Saturday. I was really, really surprised that, you know, at 2-0 against Forest, when the game was dead, how used five subs, didn't bring him on. But, you know, you speak to Eddie Howe after these games and you ask him, every, you know, press conference we're in, he gets asked about Anderson, can't praise him high enough. And every week says he's getting closer to that start. But we know Eddie Howe, he's not a risk taker, he's not a gambler. It's a must-win game. For me, I think if Maxi, Willock and Miggy are all fit, I don't think Anderson starts, but I would like to see him start.
Thomas Blacker there says he thinks Maxi and Bruno will be back for Saturday. Has anyone done enough to keep them out of the starting 11? If they're back, and we have to also say they may be fit, but match fitness is a totally different thing, but you think they've had a couple of weeks now. They obviously had the extra days after the West Ham game was postponed. Will they be kept out of the squad because of anyone's form, or if they are kept out of the squad, kept out of the starting 11, sorry, it'll be simply down to not having, you know, an hour in their belts to use?
I think if they're both fit, the start. I think Longstaff hasn't really set the world right in the last couple of weeks. Ryan Fraser looked better against Crystal Palace, but again, you know, just sort of lacking that final ball that Maxi's really improved on in the last couple of games. So for me, I think nobody's done enough to keep those throughout the team. I think, given that if they're fit or firing, they walk back in Saturday, and I hope that they are, you know, back in action, because, you know, we've needed them in the last couple of weeks.
I mean, there's going to be a frustration, isn't there, on the part of Willock, more on the part of Sean Longstaff. You know, he signs that contract, but he knows, I would think, deep down, he's not first choice of everyone's fit. They were obviously in the market for another centre midfielder, didn't come over the line this time around. But then you've been handed this opportunity, and obviously you don't want to ever see your teammates get injured, you know, but when you're handed this opportunity, as you often are in football, you have to seize it. And these opportunities are not going to come very often, I don't think. I don't think Bruno's going to be one of these players who gets injured and injured. And I think it's just, you know, you'll pick up one every so often, but he's certainly not going to be a Callum Wilson kind of type. Longstaff, as you said there, what has he done? He's not really seized that opportunity, and that will be a massive frustration for him.
I think, look, he was good against Liverpool. That assist for Isaac's goal was obviously fantastic, but then you know, he goes and drops an anonymous performance after that. We saw at the end of last season, you know, those last four or five games where Eddie Howe really had him playing his best football since Benitez was at the club. But there's just that little bright spark and you get excited. It's like Miggy, you get excited about him, then, you know, you're let down again and the rug sort of pulled. But look, I agree with you, Bruno. I don't think he's going to be one of those players that we're going to see missing too often. The big thing now for Longstaff and Willock is they need to put in the performances to nail down that third spot. And when you've got Elliot Anderson knocking on the door to try and take it off you, you know, they're going to struggle. Now, Willock's been better, I think, as the season's gone on. I thought he looked sort of out of sorts against Forest, even though they won. But Elliot Anderson is for me, could easily take one of those three midfield spots. And again, we're asking myself, you know, why can't Longstaff sort of nail down that spot? But as I said, you know, with Anderson before, it's a positive dilemma for how to have at this stage of the season.
Got Graham Morton there saying it's great that we're not talking about the back four, how the mindset has changed. And it is, it's settled. Eddie Howe mentioned to the media recently that he feels the defensive work is his, you know, really improved, and that's something he's really happy with. And it is down, I think, to having a settled back four, but also the players actually, you know, stepping up. And Botman looks very assured. Share has come on leaps and bounds. You know, whatever Eddie Howe is doing on the training ground with him week in, week out is working really well. And then just Kieran Trippier, Matt Target on either side. We knew how good Kieran Trippier was. England international, you know, Champions League, La Liga. But Matt Target, I've been pleasantly surprised by. You know, I think a lot of people were rocked by that dead leg he had. He missed a few games. He's come back in, and it's not just his defensive work either, though. It's his distribution of the ball. He can pick a pass, and I've been really surprised by him, and hopefully he can continue. He's got the momentum behind him and can really push on.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, since he arrived in January, I don't think he's really put a foot wrong. You know, my only real criticism of him sometimes is that, you know, he's maybe lacking in pace, and I think sometimes he gets caught a bit flat-footed. But I think when, you know, you've got Maxi, you know, who maybe doesn't track back as much as Howe would maybe want, you know, Target's a safe pair of hands. I think he's done very well. He's came straight back into that team after the dead leg. Trippier, is, you know, as we all know, we don't need to say, he's already sort of on course to become, you know, one of the best right backs this club's ever had. And I think it's such a positive thing when you've got Dan Burn playing out of his skin every week. What a start the season he's had. And he can't get in the team. You know, as we said, Botman's came in, he's slotted straight in. Fabian Scher, I think, has been really, really good. Again, one of those players that seems to have found that form that we saw maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when Benitez was at the club. So, yeah, look, as Graham says, it's fantastic that we don't really have to talk about the defence and the defensive issues. And that's also credit to Eddie Howe because, you know, one of the biggest criticisms and maybe one of the biggest reasons fans were a bit unconvinced when he came in was that defensive record at Bournemouth. It was always, if Bournemouth won a game, they were just going to outscore their opponents. Whereas he's came in at Newcastle and he's completely steadied that ship.
There's also a credit to the owners because they've listened to the manager who's gone, right, we've got an issue at right back, we've got an issue at centre back, and we've got an issue at left back. And they've gone, okay, here's the pot of money. Tell us what you want. The scouts have gone and found, you know, the players that want Botman, obviously wanted by AC Milan. It's what I think what it shows, the improvement in the defence, yes, is obviously a lot of work gone in on the training ground. And what it shows, there's just a unity from top to bottom, from the boardroom right down to the training pitch. There's a unity and everyone's working together. And this is kind of the first sign of that, I think, because Newcastle's defence is much better. It does look assured. It looks like, you know, you're not fearing every time an opposition player's running at the defence as you once were under Steve Bruce or right at the start of Eddie Howe's tenure when it looked slow and it looked laboured. And I just think it just shows you the working relationship and how everyone's pulling in the same direction and the benefits of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot gets made of the fact that, you know, they've spent, you know, close to 200 million, but they've spent it in the right way. As we said, the one area of the team that really needed work after Bruce left was the defence. And, you know, they've spent a lot of money, but they've brought in the right players. Burn, Target, players that aren't flashy, but they're just steady Premier League players. And as you said, it just shows that cohesion from top to bottom. So, club are in a fantastic place. They just need to start getting wins on the board now.
And just a final word on Saturday, as I said, we will have our usual preview episode with myself and John Gibson later this week. But I think Newcastle fans and Bournemouth fans will you know, do the Royal Family proud. I think there'll be a nice unity, I think, amongst the fan base just to, you know, show that moment of respect. We had the Great North Run, of course, on Sunday, and that went ahead. And, you know, at the start, there was a couple of speeches, there was a minute's silence, and then there was the national anthem played, and it was done really, really well. The right tone was struck. At the same time, the crowds around the course were just as good as they've ever been. So it wasn't like, you know, everyone was quiet. Yes, there was a period of reflection. And I think that's what we'll see on Saturday. I think we'll see that respect. But I also think we'll see St. James's Park as loud and as boisterous as ever.
I hope we do. I mean, look, we've got 53,000 people in that stadium on Saturday. I know not every single one of them is going to be a royalist, but you would at least hope that, you know, nothing sort of spoils that that minute respect that they're obviously going to do before the game. I think I agree, once kickoff starts, you know, Newcastle fans will definitely make the most of the fact football's back and the fact that they won't be inside that stadium for a good couple of weeks afterwards. So, yeah, look, we can't really fault the atmosphere so far this season. every sort of game at St James's Park, the atmosphere has been good. They've carried the team, and I think we'll see that again on Saturday.
On to then Newcastle's latest signing, Luis Carius, 29, goalkeeper. He's been without a club since being released from Liverpool on the 9th of June. Of course, many of you guys watching and listening to this will remember Luis Carius, sorry, for that. How shall we describe the Champions League performance? Unfortunate Champions League performance in the final of 2018 when he made two absolute howlers. A lot of fans have commented on that fact, you know, he wasn't good enough for Liverpool. He's not a good goalkeeper. What it's pleasant to see is that quite a few fans have also commented and said, well, one game doesn't define a career. So, Aaron, what do you make of this signing? Obviously, Newcastle's hands have been forced slightly with the injury to Carl Dahl, the fact that Martin Dubravka has gone out on loan. But I think when you look past that one glaring error, two glaring errors in that game, you have a competent goalkeeper here who will come in and do as he's been asked to do and probably just warm the bench for the next 6 to 9 months.
Fascinating signing, really, really intrigues me. You know, as you've said, the club's hand were forced last week with Dahl's unfortunate injury, which is probably going to keep them out until probably after the World Cup. They needed to get somebody in. And I was looking actually last week at the free agents around the world in the goalkeeping department, and there's very, very few out there that you really could have got in. I think the only options that really stood out were Carius and Ben Foster.
Here. I would have taken Ben Foster.
Ben Foster. Well, for me, I think if it's a choice between Carius and Ben Foster, I'd go Carius. Purely because of the age. Foster, yes, he's very, very experienced, but I don't know. And is this me being cynical? He seems to be spending a lot of time on his YouTube.
Well, that was what I was going to say.
Rather than out on the training pitch.
On terms of ability, I would go with Foster, but I say this totally expecting Luis Carius not to get any minutes at all.
Yeah.
If you know, maybe get it in a cup competition if he's lucky. But I think when it comes down to having a point to prove, I think Luis Carius has. He's going to come back to the Premier League, and if he does get a chance, he's going to want to really show those down on Merseyside that they were wrong to treat him the way that he was treated. Whereas, like you say, Ben Foster, you know,
he's
got
now.
His YouTube
yeah.
channel.
He's done what he needs to do.
You know, good goalkeeper, but I do think in terms of a player wanting to prove himself, Carius is the right signing. But as we say, he's not going to get any game time, is he?
Well, touch wood. I mean, as we know, we obviously think that he's coming in as a backup to Nick Pope. With the hope that Nick Pope doesn't sort of suffer an injury, which obviously we hope he doesn't. But look, he's 29 years old. At one time, he was good enough to start for Liverpool in a Champions League final 4 years ago. Now, to make two howlers in a game like that, as Graham Morton says in the comments here, you know, Liverpool say he was concussed from a challenge with Sergio Ramos in that game. That is a huge come down from being a Champions League finalist to, from what I can read, not playing competitively for Liverpool again. That must take some mental strength to come back from that.
Well, you see, he hasn't played competitively, if our research is right, since the 28th of February 2021.
Yeah.
That is a long time. I mean,
yeah.
You watch the medical video that he's had at Newcastle, and he looks fit, he looks strong. But I would love to know what he's been doing, like, in between the time. Obviously, he's been to places, hasn't he? And he will have had training sessions. But it's a big, big difference from, you know, having a ball kicked at you on the training ground to competitive football. And you risk losing that edge.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, when he first left Liverpool after the Champions League, he went to Besiktas, you know, had two loan spells there, seemed to do all right. Went to Union Berlin back in his native Germany, didn't go so well, and eventually he's just sort of been left to sort of fester with the reserves at Liverpool under Klopp. So yeah, look, there's no doubt that the edge probably won't be there. You've got to hope that Howe's going to get him up to speed quickly. From what Carius has said in interviews over the summer, he's been, you know, really making a point of not having holidays. He's been trying to keep himself as fit as he can, you know, just waiting for that phone to ring. He's going to have a huge point to prove. Yes, he might not play again, but, you know, he's going to have to be ready in case he's called upon. And I think if any man can put the arm around a shoulder and get a player back to his best, it's Eddie Howe. So I think I'm hoping that we're seeing this as a fairy tale story. Karius rises from, you know, the depths or whatever happened to him, and it actually gets his career back on track, whether that's at Newcastle or whether that's at a different club.
He might get a shout in the League Cup. You know, you can see him having a few opportunities in the Cups. Some quotes from him then. He describes the move to Newcastle as a great project. He says they've got a great coach and they're building something exciting. He had 5 to 10 minutes to make his mind up when he got the call, when he hopped on a flight. And then he also says that he's there to support the other boys. And I think what actually struck me the most was he was asked about what he would like to achieve on air by the interviewer on the club website. And he said, first and foremost, he's here to kind of push Nick Pope. He wants to be competitive, but he's also here to support the other boys. And this is me reading between the lines, but you get the feeling that he's been sold the bench. You know, you're going to come in and you're going to be back up Nick Pope. And unless something goes drastically wrong with Nick Pope, your likelihood of getting minutes is going to be very, very limited. And just the way he was talking, his answers, you get the feeling that he understands that. He knows that he's happy, obviously, he's signed, he's taken on board, and that's what he's going to be here to do. And he's going to try his best to help around the dressing room to push Nick Pope. But he's well aware that he's not going to get any game time.
I mean, you would hope he's well aware. I mean, he's free agent, hasn't played since 2021. He was signed 2 days after the transfer window closed. Hopefully, you know, he knows that he's not going to be number one. But experienced character, seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. Clearly, there was some talent in there at some point that Liverpool, you know, saw. It's just about hopefully finding that. And look, as we say, he might not play, but I think he's a good body. He's a body that they're needing after Dolo's injury and obviously Dubravka's exit. Obviously, he probably isn't Dubravka's standard anymore, but I think it's a good addition. I think if it was him, Ben Foster, I'm glad it's him. And as I say, we've just got to hope that Houghton get the best out of him. But he seems to be in a good headspace. Those quotes are really positive. You know, I was watching the video of him being sort of unveiled yesterday. He looks like he's, you know, pleased with the move. Will he be called upon? We don't know. But
one of the things I think is important as well is that various reports towards the end of the transfer window about how there was potential options for Eddie Howe to bring in new players, but you know the claims are that he actually rejected these options because they weren't the right mindset, they weren't the right kind of character. And I know that the options here for a backup goalkeeper who's a free agent are limited. We've mentioned there, you're looking at maybe a handful. But you also get the feeling that if Luis Karius did not tick every single box on Eddie Howe's list of when it comes to being a good character, good influencer on the dressing room, can maybe offer some words of advice to the young goalkeepers coming through, can show a bit of leadership, can show a bit of maturity, knowing he's not going to get game time. If them boxes weren't ticked, he would not be a Newcastle United player. So I think, again, it's just another sign of the standards Eddie Howe set. And you've just got to trust the manager. You know, this player is here, yes, because Newcastle's hand's been forced, but also because he fits exactly what Eddie Howe is trying to build at Newcastle. And that largely comes off the back of the players having the right attitude and buying into the project.
I mean, I don't think there would have been much time for Karius to even have it, you know, think about it in his mind. They were so close to that 25-man deadline, but Eddie Howe all summer, just as you've said, made such a clear point of having, you know, characters in the dressing room and making sure they were signing the right players rather than, you know, just getting players in for the sake of it. So we've seen it with Lingard and other players that they turned down. So far, Howe's been proven right. Yeah. So you just got to hope that this is another one that sort of works in his favour.
I'm going to read Derek's comment now. We can't show it on screen. There's a few asterisks in there, shall we say. But I will read the comment out. He says, why should Karius get a shout in the League Cup? So I've just said that I think he'll get a look in the League Cup. Derek asks why we should play our strongest team. It's the one competition we've currently got a realistic chance of winning. It angers me when we treat that route to you with such disdain. Who do we think we are? Look, I agree. You want to play your strongest possible team, but you have to also consider the fixtures around, you know, what's going to come around the cup fixtures. Injuries, suspensions also play a part. And, you know, it's all good saying that you play Nick Pope in every game, but, you know, if he gets injured in that League Cup, then it's the wrong decision. Look, Caisse is a good enough goalkeeper to do a job in the cup competitions. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you end up making 11 changes, then yeah, you can then question whether that is your strongest team. But at the same time as well, I'm a big believer that if you're part of a 25 man squad or whatever the number is these days, then if you get called upon, you should be good enough. And I don't necessarily like it when managers get criticized for making a lot of changes, because at the end of the day, these are professional footballers and they should be able to come into a team and at least give 100% and their talent, you know, shine through.
Yeah, I think hopefully, you know, if he can get his fitness up to speed, I think, you know, Eddie Howell won't have brought him in just to, you know, make up the numbers. He'll have clearly brought them in knowing that if he needs to be called upon, he can. We saw Darlow start in the game against Tranmere. You know, they've obviously got Palace in the next round. Nick Pope looking like potentially could go to the World Cup. They've got that West Ham fixture to rearrange. FA Cup starts in January. Big fixture list. So, look, I get some fans might want to, you know, play the best team all the time. And I don't think Eddie Howe is, you know, sort of disrespecting the League Cup or that chance of getting Europe by playing.
Well, that's that team Carl played Darlow in the last round.
It was a strong team, but Carl Darlow was in net and Nick Pope and Dubravka weren't used. I think it's absolutely fine. And look, I won't be telling Eddie Howe, you know, who to pick and who not to pick, given how well he's done it so far. So look, yeah, I think as long as Karius hasn't, you know, he isn't feeling the effects of not playing a competitive game in 18 months, then I don't see any reason why he won't be used at some point, just obviously not week in, week out.
Just going back to the quote from Karius on it being a great project, what project do you think he's been sold? Because with it being a short-term deal, I can't imagine, and we haven't heard anything that, you know, he's been even suggested or hinted that if he plays well, it could end up into a, you know, a year's deal, a two-year deal. A short-term deal, we believe, to the end of the season. What project has he been sold in that case?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the deal is short-term in the sense that it's the start of 2023, potentially being extended to the summer if Darlow's injury doesn't heal as they'd like it to. Obviously, Dubravka can be recalled in January as well. Whether he'll want to or not, that's another question. Look, I think he'll be, you know, sold the exact same thing that other players who have, you know, arrived have been sold, and that is, this is a club going places. You know, this is a club that really wants to win every single game, and they've got aspirations of upsetting the Premier League big boys in the short term. Loris Karius, I think personally, will know, while he probably won't be, you know, willing the downfall of Nick Pope, Karius knows that this is a big chance for him to get his career back on track on the off chance that he actually is thrust into the spotlight again, you know, if Pope misses out. So I think there's, he wouldn't have taken much persuading. I think, you know, the chance for him to come back to a Premier League team is probably one that he, you know, jumped at given where he's been playing on loan and how his Liverpool career ended. But Newcastle have got this pull now where, yes, you know, there wasn't a lot of suitors for Karius, but they can go out and get players that, you know, other teams are wanting and who maybe, you know, wouldn't have been too sure on Newcastle about 2 years ago.
Now, Graham Morton there says he reckons Karius will earn an extension because Darlow frightens the life out of him. I don't think Darlow's that bad. One thing I was going to ask, it concerns the other goalkeeper. What does this say about Mark Gillespie? And no offense to Mark Gillespie. I mean, you know, he's a professional footballer. He has pulled on the shirt for Newcastle. He's living the dream as well of most Newcastle United fans. But I can't help but think about him and what he's thinking in this instance. I guess in many ways it shows you the brutal nature of this is Newcastle United now. You know, there's no room for sentiment. You know, if unfortunately you're not at a certain level, then the club aren't going to sit back and say, well, we'll roll the dice, we'll gamble Nick Pope's going to be all right until Carl Darlow's better, until they get a January and we can sign another goalkeeper. That's not what they've done. The old Newcastle probably would have done that. And we've seen actually plenty of examples of that in the transfer market recently, the kind of contrast. But on this particular point, they've gone out, they've reacted quickly as well. And is that what you gain from this sign? It just shows you the brutal reality of what the players have got to, you know, aim towards and levels, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, you feel for Mark Gillespie, you know, he does sort of feel like he is making up the numbers at the club. I'm sure he's a very good dressing room presence. Otherwise, you know, Eddie Howe wouldn't have him around the squad. You know, he's clearly playing that role of support with the other keepers. But if you're him, and look, it comes down to personal preference, if Darlow has obviously picked up an injury and, you know, the club obviously needed to get a third keeper in, but, you know, it looks bleak for him in terms of his future at the club. And now I suppose it's the personal preference of, does he love the dream and sit on the bench, but he's playing for his boyhood club, or he's not playing, but he's representing them. Or does he, you know, maybe drop down the leagues and try and get another, you know, another club where he's going to be playing more often? Clearly at the minute, I mean, it could change in the windows to come, but at the minute he's clearly happy to sit on the bench and just be in and around the squad. And look, you can't really blame him at the minute. So it's a shame, but like you say, it's a brutal nature of goalkeeping.
And just refreshing that Newcastle reacted so quickly to deal with this. Now, obviously, Martin Dubravka has gone to Manchester United. We don't want to dwell on it too much. We have spoken about it on previous episodes, but a lot of fans pointing out the fact that he didn't start the European game last week, wasn't it? And he went there, and it was believed largely that he would be getting game time in the cup games. I mean, there's nothing Newcastle United could have done to keep him, really. I don't think he wanted to leave. They've kind of said, okay, you've been a very good servant to the club. We understand your wishes. We'll not stand in your way. Do you think, I mean, it's only been a week or so, hasn't it? So it's a little bit, been 2 weeks nearly. It's a little bit early to say it was the wrong decision by him, but what do you think's going through his mind?
Yeah, look, I mean, I expect him to play last week. You don't know whether Ten Hag's maybe just wanting to ease him in with him, only have signed a couple of days prior. He will know, just as Karius has known at Newcastle, you know, he's probably not going to dislodge David De Gea. But he'll be expecting to play games in the near future. And look, I think it was the right decision to get rid of him. Eddie Howe, you know, has done such a good job of getting the morale as high as it is in the dressing room. You won't want anyone disgruntled in that dressing room. And as soon as Dubravka made the point that he wanted to leave, I think it was a no-brainer that he was going to go. Eddie Howe said after the sign Nick Pope that he, you know, his wish was to keep four senior goalkeepers, but he wouldn't stand in the way of anyone if they wanted to leave. That happened. Look, fans will disagree as to whether it was the right call for Dubravka to leave for Man United, where he's going to sit on the bench, but me personally, I've got no ill will towards him. I think what he's done for the club over the last couple of years, he's been a fantastic servant. If he wanted to go and have one last sort of crack at a big dressing room in European football, fair play. But I think it was the right decision to let him go. Obviously, a brutal timing for Darlow to get injured, you know, a week after he's left. But, you know, that's football. And I think the club deserve credit for getting Karius in as quick as they did when they really, really needed it.
Good luck to Martin Dubravka. We'll just finish on some really, really good news. And you may have seen on our very own website, over on social media as well, that there are four Northeast charities which are set to benefit from a huge donation from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Now, you may remember back in April 2021, the NUST launched the 1892 Pledge. Now, this is where fans signed up to pledge a monthly donation to a pot, and the end goal was to eventually buy a stake in Newcastle United. Now, this was, of course, under Mike Ashley's tenure. The takeover happened, and as the trust have said, that removed the need to raise money to safeguard the future of Newcastle United, because it's been taken over by owners with a plan, with an ambition and with cash behind them to turn Newcastle, hopefully, into a force in the Premier League. Now, the aim was always, if the dream of buying a percentage in the club didn't come true, the reality of that was the second option was always going to be the money donated to charity. The pledge finished in January of this year, And since then, the Trust and the Guardians, which include Warren Barton, have been working hard to establish where this money will go. It's £200,000. That is an astronomical amount. And after many, many months, presentations and interviews and proposals, the foundation have settled on four charities, and they are the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, the Alan Shearer Foundation, the West End Food Bank, and the Newcastle United Foundation. Projects have been put in, and the various charities have had will be given various amounts of money from this £200,000 if the members of the NUST voted through, Aaron. I mean, just an amazing amount of money for brilliant charities, and there's loads of good charities across our region that would be very deserving of this money. But I think what the Trust wanted to do here was to pick charities that have a bit of a link to the club that we can see pretty much day in, day out, benefiting people who are connected to the club, the local area, for, I think, really good charities that have been picked there. And fingers crossed it gets voted through by the members.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, the fact that Newcastle fans have dipped in their pockets and raised that amount of money anyway was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, we know that, you know, that money wasn't needed for its intended purpose, given the, you know, the takeover went through. But I don't think you can think of a better way for the money to now be, you know, be split. Four fantastic charities, all each, you know, really, really deserving of the money, and it'll do absolute wonders. So, yeah, any members, you know, vote it through, vote yes, and definitely fantastic. I mean, it just goes to show, you know, as the Trust have said it in their message today, that obviously we've put on the website, four charities that are really, really close to the club, and they've got that special link. There was obviously hundreds that they could have chosen, but I think the four that they've made, you know, each for their own reason, have been fantastic picks. So yeah, really, really, really positive for the club.
And it shows you the power of the fan base coming together as well. I mean, raising £200,000 is no mean feat. That's a huge amount of money, and it just shows you the power of this fan base.
Definitely. I mean, you know, when the fans put their heads together and come up with these incentives, you know, they very rarely don't work. You know, they're always supportive, and it was a fantastic idea from the Trust. I think, look, you know, people have scoffed at it and, you know, trying to buy the club and raising that money, but you know, that just reminds you how bleak it was at one point that fans felt the need to do that.
It does, doesn't it?
Remember, I mean, where we're sitting, we're so lucky. I mean, given that, you know, less than two years ago, that was, you know, the plan put in place. But yeah, fantastic. I mean, £200,000 from the members is absolutely incredible. So really, really pleased to see it where it's going. I think it's a really, really good decision.
And just on the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, I ran the Great North Run for the foundation, part of Sir Bobby's team, which included several of the country's best football journalists. And then somehow I was invited along to join the team as well. That's why I'm sitting a bit awkward. If you're watching live, you can see I'm not exactly sitting upright because I'm aching. However, there was a competition going over on the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation website, which offers a superb prize. You can win a Great North Run VIP spectator experience, which includes a helicopter ride from over the course. That's for next year, 2023, breakfast at the Hilton. So I'll pop that link into the comments, and it's well worth entering because it raises money for the foundation. Your full £5 will go to the foundation, and you get the chance to see the Great North Run from the air, and which is not something everyone has seen. Well, very few people have probably seen it, and I don't think many people have entered this competition, so do get involved. It's a brilliant prize. Second prize is a chance to win the shirt. You may have seen them on social media that we wore during the Great North Run. Thankfully, not the match worn ones. No one wants that. But I'll pop the link into the comments, and if you've got a spare fiver, do take part. This has been Everything Is Black and White Podcast. We're glad to be back, glad to have something to talk about, glad to see the football back on Saturday. As Aaron mentioned earlier in the show, if you are going to the game, whatever your views on the royal family, and we don't want to preach, but I think it's important just to say leave them kind of at the door. Let's you know, show a bit of respect. Let's show that this club and the fan base can do things right, and I'm sure everyone will do. I'm sure you don't need to be told, but I just thought I'd mention it there. Head over to chroniclelive.co.uk to keep up to date with all the latest Newcastle United news. And do remember to like and subscribe to the podcast.